couldn't help but notice that the offering was requested before I spoke rather than after. Good morning, everyone. Okay. If anyone can't hear me, just let me know. Okay, is that better?
Yes.
All right. Last year, here at the fellowship, I joined a sermon writing group. It was a very interesting experience, and it was a bit challenging, and it was fun. My reason for joining it was to discipline myself, to make myself write, because I don't write often or, to my mind, enough. And when I find myself writing, I see myself organizing my thoughts in a way that doesn't happen if I don't try to write them down in a coherent way. A real writer, Joan Didion, said, "I write entirely to find out what I'm thinking." And Flannery O'Connor, also a real writer, said, "I don't know what I think until I read what I wrote." So for any of you wondering what you are thinking, another group is starting in January. The first meeting is simply an orientation meeting for people to come and find out how the group works and if it seems interesting, and that will be on January 14th. Attending this meeting doesn't commit you to join the group, nor does participating in the group oblige you to stand up here and speak. Just writing for the group and hearing other people's essays is a satisfaction in itself. If you're interested in attending this orientation meeting, please contact Steve Tipps or Judith Hartwell, who might stand to, so you can recognize her. And you'll be given all the information you need to attend that meeting. Although this talk did grow out of the sermon writing group, I don't think it will amount to a sermon. Rather, I intend to argue for a way of looking at the world. News reports can tell us how to view the world, and I will talk about news reports, but I will not talk about current events. Instead, I will talk about the way news is reported, how we receive it, and about pessimism and optimism. The theme for this talk occurred to me when I read an article. It was about trees. It started out saying, "There are more trees on Earth than anyone dreamed there were." How unusual, I thought. How often do you run across good news about the environment? Apparently, with a new and more accurate counting method, scientists have revised their old estimate of 400 billion trees to 3 trillion trees. That's trillion with a T. So it seems we are far better off in the tree department than we thought we were. It sounded so hopeful, right? Less carbon dioxide and more oxygen. However, reading on, my optimism was smothered. Since the dawn of civilization, the article continued, we have destroyed almost half the trees we started out with, and it continued with more bad news. This writer just couldn't leave me in a good place. He suckered me in with cheerful beginning and then dropped me into gloom. Rather than let myself wallow around with this writer dump me, I looked for more information. I Googled trends in tree numbers. I was satisfied to find good news that writer failed to mention. I found reports that said because of better forestry management, tree numbers stopped decreasing in the 90s, and that is in spite of the fact that the human population has grown. So the trend is actually positive. Why didn't that article mention this? Did it report that for the first time in history, the ravaging of forests is turning around? No, it overwhelmed the good news with a litany of bad news. It made me think of an allergic response. The flood of bad news washed away the good like an immune response overwhelms a disease agent that enters the body. That started me thinking about other kinds of unreported good news. Certainly there's plenty of material for bad news, but what about unreported good news? What about the good news that may lurk in the shadows of our daily discouraging news reports? That's my focus today. My research strategy was to ignore the stuff of headlines and look at trend lines instead. Headlines are about current circumstances, mostly with emphasis on negative circumstances. By contrast, trend lines compare how things are now to how they were in the past. Here's an example that points out how bad news can obscure positive trends. Current news and our own shopping tells us grocery bills have gone up recently and will probably continue to do so. This is bad news. It's a strain for people living on tight budgets. However, if we look at trends, we discover that on average, all over the world, food is more available and cheaper than at any time in history. In the United States, people spent half their income on food in the 1900s. Now it's more like 10%. Certainly, hunger will still exist, but it's far less common than in the past. Starvation was once commonplace, but it's now nearly unknown in the developed world and greatly diminished elsewhere. Looking at trends can change our perspective on the short-term up and down blips in food costs. Crop yields three times what it was 50 years ago produces more food, and more food is grown on fewer acres than ever before. This means more acres can be devoted to green space. That's more unreported good news. Or if it is reported, it's usually overwhelmed with bad news that tells us this seems like a good thing, but actually, for one reason or another, it's a disaster. And I will get back to that later when I talk about optimism. In the midst of daily bad news reports, it's easy to forget about trends in good fortune. We're not aware of the fact that surveys show that lives of most people have gotten better. Yours and mine have certainly gotten better. Just think about dentistry a few decades ago. Dentures by 50 and cavity-ridden kids. To say nothing of how painful dental appointments used to be, can anyone deny the good fortune of that progress? I had dental surgery earlier this month. With all the advances in history, I just can't fathom why they haven't figured out a way past those painful Novocaine injections. I white-knuckled my way through them while reminiscing about the laughing gas I could have had in the old days. And medicine? I've had two hip replacements. They were a piece of cake. I was back riding my horse 8 weeks after each one. They feel so natural, I never think about my bionic parts. Before they perfected hip replacement, constant pain and laudanum fogs severely reduced the quality of many a life. How our lives have gotten so much better can elude our awareness like fish don't know they're wet. Our attention tends to go more to the negative. Media is no help. There are daily reports of terrible things happening in the Middle East, the Ukraine, and Africa, and Paris. And there's climate change. We don't have to search for real events to give us a gloomy view. I look for antidotes to the gloomy view by prowling the internet, looking for things that have gotten better. I looked at trends in things like pollution and disease, violence, and poverty. When I looked up air pollution, I found the EPA reports that American air has been getting cleaner and cleaner over the last 30 years. For all of us air-breathing creatures, that's got to be a good thing. Another thing I found was that 30 years ago, half the world's population was classified as poor. Today, by the same measure, poverty is less than 22%, and less than 10% live in extreme poverty. Of course, there are too many living in poverty, but we are gaining on it. I also read an estimate that all over the world, millions are lifted out of poverty every year. In addition, surveys show the conditions of poverty have changed over the decades. Just as technology has made our lives better, it has also done so for those classified as poor. Here in the U.S., 63% have cable or satellite TV, 80% have air conditioning, and 43% have internet access. Of course, this doesn't mean we can relax our concern for the poor, but it does mean that more people are better off than at any time in the past. When I looked up trends in disease, I found positive reports there too. Although it is still a devastating problem, deaths related to AIDS in Africa has decreased by a third over the last decade. Also, if you must get cancer, now is a better time than ever before. Over the last 50 years, the five-year survival rate for adults with cancer has nearly doubled. The survival rate for children is also much improved. Let's look at longevity. In 1900, the average lifespan was 47 years. By 1960, it was 70 years. Now it's about 80 years. I bet in 10 years' time, when we're growing hearts in Petri dishes, 90 will be the new 70. All in all, in bumps and starts, in many ways, we are gaining on human suffering. But then that news is rarely brought to our attention. I read a survey that found the media gives us 17 bad news reports for every good news report. But we really can't blame the news media. They are meeting a demand. We, the news consumers, are more willing to hear bad news than good news. Media, like any other business, is market-driven. What's driving the media? It's our own appetites. The dark diet our media offers serves the dark side of our appetites. Bad news is the chocolate of information diet, or information diets. We call our craving for chocolate and other sugary things a sweet tooth. Similarly, scientists say, we have a sweet tooth for bad news. Our fascination with bad news came about in the same way as we got our appetites for sweet foods, as scientists tell us. Our taste for sweets came about in the long ago past, when getting enough calories to support life was a problem every single day. But at certain times of the years, trees full of sweet, ripe fruit could be found. Some loved all this sweetness, and they sat in the trees happily gorging on fruit. But some disdained it. They continued to scratch around on the forest floor for grubs and tubers. Consequently, the sweets eaters in the trees consumed more calories, calories converted to body fat to get them through the lean times. They lived longer, and they had more children than those who preferred grubs and roots. So it was the sweets eaters that survived to become our ancestors, and they passed on that love of sweets to us. Having a sweet tooth, you could say, is part of our DNA. That's why we make apple pie and not grub pie. It's the same for news. An appetite for bad news is also in our DNA. Just as eating the sweet fruit fostered survival, so did knowing all the bad news, knowing about all the bad things that are happening and can happen or have happened. This makes for good predictions about what might happen in the future, and that makes for wise decisions. It was the warriors that kept track of all the bad news who became our ancestors. Our ancestors in the long ago past lived in a dangerous world of beasts and enemies, and those who didn't worry got raided by aggressive neighbors, trampled by mastodons, or eaten by saber-toothed tigers. Those folks that looked for, remembered, and passed on bad news, in other words, the warriors, survived to become our ancestors. We're not the descendants of happy-go-lucky, optimistic, low-anxiety risk-takers. We are the inheritors of worry. To feed our worrying minds, we are designed to pay attention to bad news, to remember it better, and to pass it along quicker. There's a saying, the only thing faster than the speed of light is bad news. Good news flows like molasses. So, as with a taste for sweet things, we inherit an appetite for bad news. It's part of our DNA. Bad news surrounds us. The world is full of disasters, violence, disease, poverty, and environmental problems. But there is good news, too. I looked at trends, how things have changed over time. Instead of looking at weeks or months, I looked at decades, up to a century. I wanted to see the forest rather than the trees, which, if you remember, trees were where we started today. I came up with some positive counterintuitive examples, like American homicide rate is half of what it was in 1990. Assault against women by intimate partners has dropped by almost two-thirds since 1990. During the same period, rape and assault of women by strangers has dropped about 75%. Looking across centuries, violent death, even with two world wars in the 20th century, is on a downward trend. Infant deaths are decreasing, and so is death by disease in general. With all the bad news that surrounds us, it's hard to realize that a greater percentage of people are flourishing better than ever before. My article about trees started with good news. Then it qualified it with bad news. This is what I call a yes, but reaction. The good news that we have more trees than we thought is qualified by yes, but we already destroyed half the trees. Yes, I get that. At the dawn of civilization, land had to be cleared for fields. Wood was needed for fuel and to build shelters. Then it's true, commerce ravaged forests. But mindless human destruction is waning, maybe not as fast as it could be, but there are successes. And the trend is positive. Isn't this worth reporting? I think the media is allergic to hope. The yes-but reaction tends to be automatic. The yes-but reaction, for example, about the elimination of hunger by increases in crop yields is fertilizers are polluting. And that's true. We do pay a price for more people eating. We can't continue to pay that price. However, tremendous resources are now being devoted to solving this problem. And in my optimism, I think we'll figure it out. Perhaps I can be accused of over-optimism. But Helen Keller said, "Optimism is the faith that leads to achievement. Nothing can be done without hope and confidence." I don't know if hope is in our DNA, but what's in our DNA isn't always good for us. What's in our DNA served us in the long ago past. In modern times, it's advisable to rise above our DNA by resisting the sweets that make us fat and give us diabetes. Similarly, for a rational perspective, I think we can rise above our DNA that inclines us to cling to bad news and gives us a tunnel vision leading to an over-pessimism. Perhaps by balancing the all-too-common pessimism with some optimism, we can find realism. Perhaps by taking a long view that looks at trend lines along with headlines, we can be more hopeful about the bumpy course of human progress. I thank you for your attention.